I think we should begin with proving something about it. In fact, it's good to derive a few rules to see that we can to simplify some of the typical derivations. But maybe very, very easy things can be shown without any derived ones. What could be simplest possible one? Can you tell me how to derive, for example, this peak? What shall we do? I mean, we need to start with absolute trivialities, and then so that we can see that at least we can do the most obvious things that we were able to do before. So we had the introduction rule for this thing, which was saying that you can always replace semicolon with conjunction. But now what? Yes?
I think we need reason.
Yes. So we had a rule saying that if something like this was derivable, okay, and I switch from phi to alpha, then something like this would be derivable too. And here, what is this gamma in this particular instance of weakening? So it should be a context with a hole. Which context with a hole is this?
A hole.
A hole, exactly. A hole in its own right. And then the delta here? So, single formulas are bunches. Please finish, because I'm giving you already so much over all the other people. Right. So this was rather easy. The dual rule for this junction is Evermann-Trigel, right? This actually is exactly the same as it used to be. What I'm going to do now. Yes?
We had two right rules for this junction. You can choose to eliminate one of the conjunctions.
Yeah. And this is again axiom. So this is very, very trivial. So far, nothing particularly cool is happening. What are other rules that we? What other things that we can do without deriving some additional rules to simplify our life? Well, let's say okay. Here we are using already. We are already trying to derive rules rather than single sequence. What am I going to do now? So assume that I have this. How to go around it? This was your house of Gabba. You are not submitting anything or what? Okay, good.
Okay.
So what shall we do now? Actually, let me see what are the rules that I wanted to derive now. Yeah, maybe for this one, because here we are using to derive, here we are using already some form of left implication rule, we have some more convenient forms of left implication rule. So maybe before we already had two successful derivations, and this is already more complicated. So we will finish this later. Now that we begin to see how this system works, let us prove a little lemma. So first of all, we want to show that for any formula, maybe let me switch back to phi and alpha, this is derivable. So this would be generalized axiom rule. This is a trivial. Then we had this other formulations of the rules for multiplicative connectives. And here we have somewhat simplified version of the implication rule, because if you remember, it was I'm trying to oversimplify it. So I'm repeating the same gamma here, but still these are three different formulas, phi, psi, and chi. But if this is the same gamma, I'm saying that we can prove this. So this is a simpler version of the left implication rule. And maybe let's also have a simpler version of the disjunction rule, because the one that we had was also rather unsavory. So let's assume that we have that the bunch gamma with hole, where hole was filled in with phi, gives us chi, and the very same bunch, but with phi replaced by psi. So remember, in the original rule for left rule for disjunction, we had two different bunches. Here we had gamma with holes. Here we had gamma, and here we had delta. So now we are saying that this can be derived. Does this require any reasoning at all? I mean, most of these rules you should see, assuming that you can read it, by the way, because the blackboard was horribly erased. Can you read it? Clear? Maybe. Maybe let me use the other blackboard and erase this one again so it's. So what do we do with the first one? And this is straightforward application of mechanics, right? So not much is happening here. Again, shall we clarify again the same thing as we had here, that what is our, well, here we have clash between this gamma and this gamma. So what is our bandwidth hole in this application of weakening again? The hole itself, right? The delta is alpha, and delta prime is our old gamma. How about this new one? How did the conjunction rule used to look like before? So our previous formulation of the conjunction rule had still the flavor. It was pretending almost that it's like multiplicative formulation, combining resources. So in order to arrive at something like this, we would need to combine the thing that we used to arrive at phi and the thing that we used to arrive at psi using semicolon. Sorry, it's total mess with alpha, beta, psi, phi, psi, and chi. So the formulation of the conjunction rule was this. But now we're using what? Contraction. We could not only weaken, but also contract. And here we have the same gamma here. So again, we have bunch with a hole, which is just a hole, and both delta, delta prime, or whatever it was actually in the formulation. How was I calling this? Delta, semicolon, delta. OK, so here delta. Delta. So here. The gamma is gamma and delta is gamma as well, right? This is the conjunction rule and the rule for conjunction. So the hole itself, the gamma in the formulation of the contraction rule is gamma, and the thing that we plug into this is hole, the old delta is the new gamma. Similar trick will happen here. So let me make sure again that we have the right implication rule. So what our old rule for implication would allow us to reach would be something that has three bunches combined with two semicolons, right? So maybe starting with this thing, we have Ah, and there is a mistake here, or at least something very unreadable. This should have been semicolon. Of course, it doesn't make sense otherwise. This is also semicolon in my notes. Yes, of course it is. So what the old implication rule produced from this? I mean, what the most general implication rule, because this is just a special case. Those special cases are useful to have most of the time, but in general, we need the most general, the more general form that we have seen in the last lecture. But what this more general form would give us here? What am I allowed to write now? Right. And now what? Yes. So now I'm using contraction plus possibly associativity allows for semicolon, right? And the congruence rule. So it depends a bit how this is read. We were deliberately vague about it. I didn't even say whether semicolons are associating to the left or to the right when I write at least two of them, precisely because we had congruence rule and it didn't really matter. But and this is precisely, what am I writing here? This should be, why nobody protests? This should be phi implies psi.
We did already.
You did? Well, then when you protest, you should protest with full voice and. And you can guess already that a similar trick will happen with the disjunction rule, right? So, again, what that does. Our original rule for disjunction allow me to deduce. If I have this, the original situation I'm having here, then the old disjunction rule is allow me to deduce what? What I'm allowed to write on the left hand side. That gamma phi or psi
semicolon,
yes,
gamma phi or phi implies chi.
Exactly. Well, implies, sequent arrow, entails, however we want to read it. But then again, contraction. So you see what would happen if I had comma here instead of semicolon. Well, here it doesn't really matter because I don't have multiplicative disjunction, but let's say here. This is as good as we would be able to get if the semicolon would be replaced by ordinary comma. Good. So we have already two or three examples of working derivations, and we also have some useful derived rules. We may try to attack some more interesting formulas. For example, distributivity. You remember that distributivity of additive conjunction over additive disjunction, or the other way around as well, was not necessarily derivable. I'm not sure if we did an example for, if we discussed this explicitly in the lecture for linear logic, but in a linear system we didn't have that. We only had distributivity over multiplicative conjunction over this fusion thing, which is now separating conjunction over the ordinary lattice or additive disjunction. Do we still remember this or not quite? Maybe let's first recall the distributivity laws that hold also in linear logic. Where can I write? Okay, let's still use a bit of this one. So these are the things that we should have simply because we are substructural. These things are true in any substructural logic with additive and multiplicative connectives. But now the interesting thing is that we also should be able to prove, again, this, the first one of them would be valid in any substructural logic simply because of monotonicity of the connectives. So this is valid but more interestingly we should be also able to derive the other half of this thing. Additive distributivity or lattice distributivity not valid in linear logic, Lambert calculus, and so on and so on. Okay, I already did my share of writing. Maybe now your help can go beyond dictating me from benches. As soon as you are ready with whichever one of these you fancy, let me know. You can, of course, use the rules that we have just used. So, has anybody managed to prove at least one of this? Yes, go ahead. Oh, okay, the most funny one. Good, okay, if you decided to take raisins out of the cave, nothing can stop you. Well, just write the derivation. Ah, you mean whether you should write bottom up or upside down?
Yeah.
Of course, ideally we should write them from top to bottom, bottom up or upside down. Top to bottom or upside down. Yes. Ideally we should write top to bottom, but whatever you find most convenient. We were doing things the other way around so many times. This is the right rule, and this is the right rule for this junction, indeed. Okay. It's easy to remember. It happens on the right, and the principal connective is this junction. The original one or the modified version?
Yeah.
We can call it. Yeah, so this is x plus v or x v for weakened axiom we've integrated weakening. This is right rule for conjunction prime. This is left rule for implication prime. And this is left rule for disjunction prime, let's say. I mean, this is not hardly worth using at all as a lemma, right? Because it was just one step directly using quickening, but the other ones. Wait, what is this? Ah, so we are using now, okay, so maybe let's be explicit. What is our bunch with hole now?
Our bunch with hole is...
Yeah. So maybe also write brackets so that nobody is confused about parsing. Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, well, one more step would be the to introduce conjunction on the right. Yeah. That, but yeah, let's not mess it up. It's clear enough. Hopefully. Okay, well, that was the interesting part. The fact that those things are valid in more general setup than just logic of batch multiplication doesn't mean that they are boring. So has anybody derived any of those three? I guess that at least some people would start linearly, starting from the first rather than from the last. So if you have a derivation ready, then... If not, then I can already move to something else. Vas is lost. What is going on? You have a derivation that you want to show, or is there something unclear how some of the axioms were using the derivation of the blackboard?
I
There is nothing wrong, you know, with trying to fix it publicly, because if you are confused, other people may be confused as well. So if either of you... Okay, go ahead. And that's the whole point. I mean, at the moment, we are still not expected to be fluent in all this. We have only seen the sequence system for BI yesterday, and we still can be confused how it works. This is why we're spending some more time taking it easy and playing with these derivations. The new OR rule or the old or the prime rule?
Yes,
okay.
The whole would be here.
Well, for the timing, there is just one formula. This is no bunch. So we have to make one pre-processing step. Go one step up. What?
Go.
Mm-hmm. So turn the formula into a bunch. And now you can, yes. So this is the new rule for disjunction, which is proving immensely useful, with this gamma here being...
No, it's right on the
I would do it on the right side and just say the left side works the same.
No. Okay. I mean, the way comma combines thing on the left, the same thing as this thing combines thing on the right.
Yes.
Well, yeah. One thing is metalinguistic and another is actual connectical PI. Okay. Exactly. Well, yes. If one doesn't want to write 4 more symbols, then 6 more symbols. Thanks a lot. Okay, so we are beginning to get a grip, right? This direction, so these are the interesting parts, because here you are not just relying on monotonicity of this thing. Here and here, you are simply relying on the fact that this fusion or separating conjunction or spatial conjunction or multiplicative conjunction, however we want to call it, is, or simply star, is monotone in both arguments, something that we will play absolutely crucial role in the semantics that we are going to see. And so this thing must be below this thing, and of course this junction also has this monotone behavior. And this thing also must be below this thing, therefore the sum of these two things, that is, sum has to be below the sum of these two things. The sequence derivations will be just encoding this. And nothing much more interesting is happening here, which is why this law holds in all possible substructural logics in there or whatever, and this is a non-trivial thing to derive, which requires use of structural rules. Well, here, the problem with using this derived rules is that we hid the use of structural rules. The actual use of structural rules happened here, right? So this this looks as if it is ordinary substructural logic derivation, but it is not. This is not what in general you are allowed to do in substructural setting. Okay. So we have some orientation in with this, and now I can slowly start to build up towards definition of semantics and sounds. But before that, we still need a few syntactic notions and lemmas. So first of all, let us define let's call it, I'm not sure if this is a good name, propositional collapse of a bunch. And of course, this will be defined inductively. I was trying to find the right symbol for it. In the end, I settled, none of them is good. In the end, I settled for what seems least worst to me right now, big conjunction. So this thing is defined inductively. Propositional collapse of multiplicative emptiness will be 1 of additive emptiness will be top of alpha. Well, it will be just alpha, of course, because alpha is itself a proposition. Propositional collapse, and well, maybe let's give me a bit more space. So propositional collapse of gamma comma gamma prime will be, and I'm switching to my old notation, will be this thing, fusion or spatial conjunction, this. So we turn commas and semicolons into the linguistic actual counterparts in the system, and this will be, of course, conjunction. And now, acute observation to have is that we have absurdly many ways of saying the same thing. In particular, reformulating derivability of a given sequence. So being able to derive a sequence. Being able to derive the validity of this magic wand from the multiplicative empty. And something that is so close that it doesn't require even justify another proper number, being able to show that one, the multiplicative unit is below the string. You can already guess what is happening now. What am I going to write here? Here I had multiplicative unit, and I wrote magic wand. So here I'm writing additive implication. Yes, thank you. Of course. Sorry, that was horrible on the other side. I think I had more formulation than those five. Ah, of course, there was a trivial one prime, which was this. Please try to show whichever implication you fancy, from whichever condition, to whichever condition. I don't think that we're going to spend much time that I maybe I will also do a few of them, but it's just too boring and too tedious to do all of them. It is actually something that we are going to see very, very often. Yet another exercise of the same pattern that I'm still not decided whether I should do it on the blackboard or leave it for homework, are seven or eight different ways of formulating what it means to have weakening for the comma, for a multiplicative conjunction. All of them equally natural. Do we need any auxiliary lemma about this propositional collapse first? I don't think so. But... Ah, maybe actually, so before we start proving it, let me already start stating some other lemmas, so at least I don't forget them. Another one would be tying the propositional, this coherent equivalence that we discussed last time with derivability. So let's assume that two bunches are coherently equivalent. You remember what it meant, right? It meant that we have that they were equivalent modulo associativity and commutativity laws for semicolons, for colons with corresponding unit. And congruence rule. So this should mean then that gamma allows you to derive the propositional collapse of delta. Delta allows you to derive the propositional collapse of gamma, and which would be actually corollary of these two first points. That's maybe the lemma that we are proving now. So simple, boring lemmas. Anybody has any of those directions? I want to leave myself at least 20, well, maybe less than half an hour, but at least 20, 25 minutes to start introducing semantics. But are there absolutely trivial things here? So, is there any philosophy involving going from 2 to 2 prime? Or from 3 to 3 prime? So they are not equal, I mean, those directions are not really, all these implications are not quite born equal. Some of them would require probably even proper inductive proof, although most cases can be just, most of the induction can be just hand-waved. In something like Koch, you would just do one automatic tactics to crash it all. But so if I have this, well, okay, maybe not right, let me not write alpha. So this is a special case of our phi, right? Then what I can use? There was introduction rule for multiplicative unit, right? where again our boundary with the whole is the whole itself. And absolutely analogously, I had introduction rule for the additive unit. Ah, what I'm writing. I don't really need this M here, sorry. So these are trivial things. Now, how about going from 1 prime to 2 and 1 prime to 3? This also doesn't look like much of philosophy, right? So 1 prime says that I have some phi secant arrow alpha. You probably don't want this to be obscured, so maybe I will move to another blackboard. So let's move from 1 prime to 2. This is what we have, right? Well, we have monoid laws, which were all packed in one congruence rule. Did I call it congruence rule? Yeah. I call it, that was structural rule. That was, in fact, that was called probably E because of exchange. Anyway. So, I didn't name it. Okay, so let's call this rule coherent equivalence rule, if the equivalence itself was called coherent equivalence. Well, actually, sorry, I mean, I could do that and then use once again coherent equivalence rule because we are commutative, but let's save ourselves our one step, so I can write it on the left rather than on the right. In general, in your solutions, I wouldn't really care whether you write these things on the left or on the right, so I assume that commutativity is being used implicitly. And now what? I'm using just the introduction rule for the right introduction for multiplicative implication. So in this case, our phi is propositional collapse of gamma, and our psi is alpha. Right? So in fact, I should have said that maybe it would have been easier if we first stated this lemma in a special case where instead of whole bunch gamma, we have just a single formula here. Okay, now we can start to interesting things. Anybody sees then what to do if three?
You exchange everything that's multiplicative with additive.
But in fact, we could also travel in the other direction. So maybe it would have been easier to return to this exercise that I was trying to do at the very beginning and notice that, so here we did one direction of something showing that these two sequences are really one and the same thing, or they are equipotent or mutually divisible, or however you want to call it. So the other thing that we could show is that something like this allows us, in presence of cut, of course, to get here. And more generally, maybe, let's do it in full generality. So if I have psi here, which in this case would be probably 1, then I can get here, and analogously, if I have this, then I can get this. In this case, our psi will be probably top, and then having this, we will be using the fact that phi and top and phi are equivalent. How do we go about it? So of course, now finally we have to start using cut, by the way, which is something that we avoided so far. So these are the right rules. Probably we would like to also to combine use of cut with left rules for implication. So we should, so this should be the intermediate thing, this formula. Let's actually start with this one, especially that we still have left rule for implication on the board. Well, probably I will need, in fact, to use cut more than once. Okay, maybe let's not try to do two applications on cut at the same time. So I probably will also want to use the fact that phi sequence arrow that phi entails, that phi and psi entails phi. But that would probably be the last application. Here I want to produce something using this left rule. So if I have that we have that chi gives us chi by axiom. And okay, in order to fit the pattern, I probably need the additive you need. And on the other hand, I get that phi gives me phi. I didn't give myself enough space. So let me write here again what I want to prove. Probably this will need to be longer derivation than I assumed. So here I have also that phi gives me phi. So maybe instead actually of this additive unit here, I can use simply weakening to have phi here as well. So in this way, I'm getting this. Yeah. So now by the cut rule, I'm getting psi, or rather phi, comma, semicolon psi, yields chi. This was our modified left implication rule. And voila. Have I made any mistake here or not? So here in the sorry. What am I writing here? It should have been, of course I made, it should have been phi implies chi rather than phi. Sorry for this. So now the way I'm using cut rule here is this is my bunch with a hole, phi semicolon hole. And I'm replacing a stronger formula inside the hole. Logically stronger but less informative formula by something from which you can derive this formula. This is what the CAD rule said we can always do inside holes in our bunches to write this. Nowhere else here because I was producing this on the spot, so even without notes. So if you see any rules incorrectly applied, protest. So not to waste more time, I'm leaving this for the analogous case as Hausdorff-Gabe. And then having this insight, one can do also the and plus possibly just a little bit of cut, what can also go, well, in case of what we have just proved, back from 3 prime to 1 prime. The part that we still have not discussed yet is how to move back and forth between 1 and 1 prime. And this would be a properly inductive proof. Going by, but very trivial one, right? Going by the, so in one direction we'll be using simply all the time introduction rules for left introduction for multiplicative conjunction, additive conjunction, and multiplicative and additive units. Maybe let me just, or maybe not, let me not write it, because this is still one of many other things that we could do as House of Gabber, and otherwise we should be able to fill this easily. So this would be using left introduction rule will take you, and doing inductive reasoning will take you from 1 to 1 prime. And in the reverse direction, it will be constantly using cut and right introduction rules. Similarly, this thing, for the time being, will leave because some people were already killed by boredom. So maybe just to start doing something moderately interesting in the last 15 minutes, I can start to tell you about semantics for this thing. And then maybe you can continue or leave parts of this with blood with those trivial lemmas that we have. So in our semantics, we'll use four different related notions. We will talk about partial pre-ordered resource monoids. We will also have total pre-ordered resource monoids. We will have partial discrete resource monoid. And we will have total discrete resource monoids. With the obvious inclusions. So let me first define what a partial discrete resource monoid is. Sorry, partial pre-ordered resource monoid is, because this is the most general one. It is a structure of this form, where is a partial commutative monoid with unit E. Is this clear what it is? So this is a binary operation satisfying satisfying monoid laws wherever it is defined. Commutative monoid laws. Maybe let me say that, let me write that this is our convention. X times Y is blitz, whenever X, Y is undefined. For the time being, it's just notation. It doesn't mean that I'm adding some funny new element. But maybe later, when we try to convert partial things into total things, this notation can be reified somehow. I wanted to write a few examples, or maybe even a full definition. So rather, it should be more often written in the negative way, when not equal blitz means that it is defined, it is a concrete element, another concrete element of M. So, let's hope that I can reproduce all this quickly and on the spot. So for example, what does this should mean? For any M times E is not blitz, and E times M is not blitz, and M is equal to M times E, is 3 times M. There is not much philosophy here. For any M times N not blitz, well, depending how you throw this in the notational convention, this is almost unnecessary thing to write. If you have this, then N times M is also not blitz, and M times N is equal to N times N. In fact, well, if this is undefined, so according to this convention, this would be, we could even drop this thing. Then the associativity, so this is the commutativity law, and this is the monoid law for associativity. We are saying that whenever M times N is not is defined, so not undefined, and N times O is not undefined, then M times N times O is not undefined, and M times N times O is also not undefined, and M times N times O is equal to M times O. Am I assuming too much here? Probably not. Hopefully not. I actually need to double check it, but this looks about right. Maybe it should have been instead that if this is defined, and this is defined, then this thing is defined as well. Right, but this is just a part of this definition. And I didn't say anything about the order here. So the order is supposed to satisfy so-called well, first of all, this should be partial order. And it also should satisfy so-called bifunctionality. Bifunctionality or monotonicity or bimonotonicity rather condition. Which says that whenever M is below M prime, N is below N prime, and M prime times N prime is defined, is not bleat, then N times N is also defined, and M times N is below M prime times N prime. This is what my partial preordered resource monoid is. Well, if...
Sorry? The previous one, A3.
Ah, A3. Sorry. Well, all those two things imply all the rest. Does this look about right? Or is it too much to assume?
Looks like it's definitely too much because it can be...
Yeah, probably... Probably I should have written that instead that this thing is defined. And then, of course, this condition is not necessary anymore because it's part of assumption.
So I mean this, I mean, that's what the part I'm getting at is I mean the definedness of M times N times O as assumed here to imply definedness of N times O.
No, so I'm saying now the corrected version is saying if M times N is defined,
yes,
and M times N o, times O is defined,
yes,
then M times O is defined.
In particular, N times O is defined.
I.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what people often mean by this. Well, do you really want to assume this, or does it supposed to follow?
Okay, this will be postponed until the next lecture. I will double check if this should be part of the assumption or this should, we can already say, follows from those two things. Sorry. It's always a mess with those partial structures which have binary operations to remember what should be defined and what not. It can be easily reproduced if you reformulate this partial binary operation in terms of ternary relations, which will satisfy some special conditions, because this is really what is meant here. But I don't want to risk wasting our 4 last minutes on making it another mistake. So this is the official version, and I'm going to either send you by email or correct myself at the beginning of the next lecture what exactly I should say. So this is the most general notion, anyway, that we have. And then we specialize it to these three more narrow things. And you can already guess that being discrete simply means that the partial order is discrete. Whereas being total, well, means that we can forget about these damned bleats because everything is totally defined. And then, well, we have long lists of beautiful, well-motivated computer science-like structures looking like various models of RAM, not random access machines, but random access memory, Petri nets, There's also logic programming interpretation, but we have to do it next time. So let me just finish this. So and this script means this thing is discrete. That is, M is below N if and only if M is equal to N. And then, as you can imagine, we will have intuitionistic-like Kripke semantics, which will send formulas to upset in terms of this partial order. And the clauses for the additive connectives will be exactly the clauses that we remember from Kripke semantics for intuitionistic logic. The clauses for multiplicatives, well, they will be somehow defined using this thing. And then we will have some kind of soundness, and perhaps even we will have forcing definition and soundness, and then maybe even some kind of completeness results with respect to this. But first, we need to overview all possible instances, as there are really quite a few surprisingly natural interpretation of what this structures can be. But this will all have to happen next week. So, see you. Thank you.